The volatility in the markets, particularly the precious metals markets, was quite dramatic. So let's just dive right into money and markets. In the fixed income markets, you know the problems with the euro are serious. We know last week we discussed the fact that several polls indicated that market participants thought there was more than a 50% chance that countries would start pulling out of the euro. Email comes in from Axel Merck of Merck Funds announcing that he's shedding all euro holdings. If you go back and listen to the interview with Axel Merck in our archives, Axel was one of the great promoters of the ability of the euro to hold together. So that's a pretty significant little market indication that there's things are not all right in euro land, as we've seen from the continuing headlines. The ECB stopped making loans to some of the Greek banks. We've had additional downgrades on Greek sovereign debt, reports of deposit runs on Greek banks, and real discussion of not only is Greece going to leave the euro, but what does that mean in terms of economic impact and what could happen. In response, I've reposted a quote from Sir James Goldsmith writing in The Trap on why the euro will not work and the problems of trying to put very different economies with very different productive rates into one centralized currency, and it's as prescient today as it was then. And it's from his book, The Trap, and it's an excellent book if you want to understand part of the problem with trying to centralize very different cultures and economies into one currency. You have to ask a question if this is part of the economic warfare going on in the European crisis, but an Italian court just ruled that the MRR vaccine made by Merck and others triggers autism. That's a pretty big concession coming in court documents. The equity markets were just as wild. We talk a lot on the Solari report about sort of systemic shorts on collateral and about the real assets being there in the mortgage market, in the gold market, in the stock market. But a little nugget fell out today. Matt Taibbi had it on his blog. Overstock and the chairman of Overstock, Patrick Byrne, has been a leader in trying to warn about naked short selling in the market, had litigation with Goldman. That litigation has been tightly held under seal. Morgan Lewis bopped out one of the motions on that litigation unexpectedly. It looks like it was probably a mistake, but it has some very interesting nuggets about what's been going on in the naked short selling in the stock market. It's up on the blog, so check it out. Of course, the big story in the stock market was Facebook's IPO. It's obviously very big, and it's going to put a lot of money in a lot of people's pockets, but I think it's a distraction. It's coming out at the high side of any range projected. It's $38 billion a share, which values the company at about $100 billion, which means that's $125 for every each of the 800 million people said to be using it. It will probably offer quick profits on a deal like this with this kind of retail following. If it comes out at 38, it wouldn't be, you know, impossible to believe in the next 30 days if this works. Some people will get as much as a double on the offering. It wouldn't also surprise me in 5 to 10 years if Facebook was, you know, a bygone phenomenon. Let's see if it can generate revenues, particularly in the emerging markets. But it's big capital gains for the insiders and the employees and for the early traders. We even have a Facebook co-founder renouncing citizenship to save money. You know, don't think that this is good news for the economy. We get reports of Hewlett-Packard considering cutting 25,000 jobs. But needless to say, the impact on San Francisco real estate has been quite supportive. As I've mentioned before, it's almost the Facebook effect. I put up in the blog post on Facebook a link to estimates of the people using, or the estimate by country of people using Facebook. It's very interesting. The greatest saturation is Monaco. More than 100% of the people there have a Facebook account. Falkland Islands has 80%. You kind of wonder what's going on there. The precious metals market, as I said, was we saw a real meltdown so far in May from 1660 to 1540. which just takes it right back around. It's up to about 1570 plus today. It takes it a little bit over where it ended the year, so we've had quite a run up, a run back down. But it's much more volatility than many people are used to living with. So we saw silver melt down likewise, with the gold-silver ratio climbing to 56, which is fairly close to where Franklin has been saying he would recommend a gold silver trade at 57.5. It's a good thing to remember that if you continue to expect, as I do, continued volatility, silver is going to be much more volatile. So if you don't want to deal with the volatility, gold is bad enough. You may not want to trade. California continues to report a serious budget crisis. It's nothing, though, compared to sort of the coming U.S. fiscal crisis and the issues that are going to have to be dealt with immediately after the election, probably in January. There's also bad news under the carpet in Japan and China, a lot of debate about how bad the slowdown in China might be and who it will affect. Remember, their biggest customer is the Eurozone, so it's not disconnected with events going on in Europe. We'll talk more about it next week. The biggest mystery in the market, of course, is what in the world is going on at J.P. Morgan. It got the fighting got so bad this week it inspired me to put out a broadcast to my clients, which I try not to do. I hate to crowd their inbox with more emails. J.P. Morgan's latest SEC filing announced that they have a Wells notice on from the SEC about their investigation into the Bear Stearns mortgage portfolio. If you look at the and this is up on the blog, if you look at recent decisions on some of the mortgage-backed securities and the court cases, we could literally see, this came up in a countrywide case, we could literally see people suing on those bonds be able to put back the entire amount of the bond. J.P. Morgan Chase's 10Q, that's the SEC filing, says that this involves approximately 120 billion securities. Now, interestingly enough, this problem is far, far worse, or should be, than any trading loss being described, an announced trading loss for J.P. Morgan in the amount of $2 billion, now taken up to $3 billion today, is tiny compared to what could go wrong with the mortgage portfolio. To give you a sense of some of the Bear Stearns problem, when J.P. Morgan took over Bear Stearns, they reserved $6 billion for legal costs. That's just for the legal costs. And that's double what they're saying that they have lost on a position, a derivatives position in the corporate bond markets. Interest rates went the wrong way, and so they say they're out $3 billion. $3 billion loss on a company that has $20 billion a year of earnings is a big loss, but it's not anywhere near as earth-shattering, number one, as what could be going on in the mortgage portfolio, and it doesn't warrant the kind of attention it's getting. My guess, if I had to guess, is that the loss is much bigger. And, of course, no one knows. They're managing a position, and now that everyone knows, there's blood in the water, and it could make the position much worse as everybody tries to game them. What made the situation particularly dangerous is that the Department of Justice and FBI announced investigations. And, of course, the president, in defending Jamie Dimon, the chairman of J.P. Morgan, also affirmed that there would be an investigation. Now, the DOJ doing the investigation doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. It just means politically they have no choice. They need to be saying they're doing something. The FBI saying they're doing an investigation means that there's potential criminal liability involved, and waiving allegations of a criminal investigation has a much more serious impact on the market, on a variety of players who can impact a bank's liquidity. It's a much more serious sign. Now, why is this such a big deal? J.P. Morgan is the lead bank for the New York Fed, who is the depository for the U.S. government. And J.P. Morgan and the U.S. government, as well as other governments around the world, municipalities throughout the United States, are very operationally and from a credit standpoint deeply entwined. Let me give you some examples. If you ask South Africa who their banker is, you know, you have to their correspondent banker is JPMorgan Chase. You have to go to JPMorgan to send money to South Africa in many instances. So they have a profound impact on the clearing systems and the transfers of money back and forth around the world. They are, as the lead bank in New York, they are the lead owner, presumably, of the New York Fed, at least in a nominal sense, and then act, again, in the New York Fed role, not only as depository for the U.S. government, but as, presumably, one of the agent banks for the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which is the mother of all slush funds run by the New York Fed for the Treasury. There's an interesting documentary that someone made recently on the Exchange Stabilization Fund. You can find it on the blog. But this is a very, very powerful and important control point. They're also servicer for enormous amounts of mortgage positions and funds and bonds, as well as municipal bonds, particularly ones with government subsidies. When I was the FHA commissioner, JPMorgan Chase was by far the lead presence in the FHA mortgage insurance and Section 8 subsidy flows that went into housing bonds or municipal bonds. They're a primary dealer going out and selling Treasury securities for financing the U.S. government. And we've talked about the oil card and suppression of the gold price. These are huge commodity positions that JPMorgan Chase has had a very important role to play, if not a lead role, particularly in gold. So what we have is we have the government requiring JPMorgan Chase to implement all sorts of very sensitive or important positions for them globally, and that includes global criminal schemes. Now, when you ask somebody to implement global schemes every day, but you attack them and threaten them with prosecution for implementing criminal schemes, you put them in an incredible double bind, and you make it that much harder for them to implement your global schemes. It's a little bit, as I said before, like the guy when I worked in the Bush administration said, you know, he couldn't understand the infighting, and he said, this is like people in a rubber lifeboat going after each other with razor blades. Now, what's going on? Wouldn't we love to know the real story? And I think a lot may emerge, but it's clear that they're forcing Diamond to take out his lieutenants. Several people have been laid off, of course, when you ask your lieutenants to go out and do something, and then you lay them off. Whether it's politics or things go wrong, because sometimes things do go wrong in a trading position, then everybody around you gets scared. It gets harder to get the work done, particularly if you are implementing these kinds of highly classified or secretive schemes, and that makes it harder to run JPMorgan Chase. A lot of calls to get Diamond off of the board of the New York Fed. And I think if you see his lieutenants leaving and you see calls for him out of the Fed, it's not that much longer, if this succeeds, that they'll be screaming for him to get out of Morgan. If you go back and remember The Godfather, there's a scene where Michael asks his stepbrother Tom to step aside as the family consigliere. And what he says to him, he says, you're just not a wartime consigliere. And my guess is whether it's a faction fighting to get their own guy in, somebody wants somebody in that position who's meaner, tougher, and better able to handle a more warlike or deflationary environment if it comes to that. Diamond's been perfectly fine as far as they're concerned in an inflationary environment, but things are going to get much tougher and meaner next year. So, interestingly enough, as we watch Greece bow out or possibly bow out of the euro, Diamond's ethnic background is Greek. And it would be interesting to see if any of this has to do with concerns that the people who run the euro want to make sure Greece does what they want and doesn't have the option to get clearance and liquidity outside of the framework and box that they want to put them in. So could this have something to do with Greece? Maybe. But it's probably a much bigger thing, and it wouldn't surprise me if somebody wants a much younger version of Bob Rubin in there who has the ability to get the trading machine to dance for them in the event of much tougher times. But I think a clearer picture will emerge, particularly if Diamond is replaced. But I guess my guess is if there's a real problem here, it's in the mortgage-backed security portfolio, and that's what somebody wants to keep us distracted from and wants to make sure they have their boot on.